live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Listen, I'm not going to do the voice. I will not do the voice, but San Diego, show me your freaking lightning bolt. Or maybe I should say, show me your freaking Aztec spear. Because holy crap, San Diego State is playing for a natty tonight. Of all the dramatic things.
Of all the dramatic things.
Of
I've
all
ever
the
seen.
Dramatic, seemingly impossible things. I am not in any way selling them as a Cinderella. I am not in any way underrating who or what they are. Damn good program. Really nice program. But we're talking about a program that had never made it past the Sweet 16. We're talking about a program that plays in a conference that has never even had a Final Four team. We're talking about a program with a coach who waited pretty much three decades to get a chance to lead his own program. He waits all that time to get on a stage like this, and then in the biggest moment of his career, hell, in the biggest moment of most of their lives, with a timeout in his back pocket, Dutch lays out and does nothing because he had so much faith that his guys could go and do this.
11 to shoot. It's to Martin.
Laying it out.
In the star tonight. Giving it back to Davis. With 5 to shoot. Taken on. A run. And it's blocked. Pulled down by Mensah. They have the one timeout. Are they going to take it or not? They don't have the scorers on the floor. It's Butler with 2 seconds. He's got to put it up.
Yo, San Diego, you don't even need to wait for me to finish this take. You should be up in here right now. 1-800-636-8686. And Lamont Butler, if you need him. If you need a guy to stroke an unbelievably pure J in the biggest spot possible. Straight off of a miss without calling timeout. Looking to get downhill. Realizing he got cut off. Adjusting. And then looking like he might not even rise up and get that shot off in time. And you want that same guy to hit one of the biggest shots ever in the history of the tournament, in the history of life, then yes, Lamont freaking Butler is your dude. Lamont Butler, welcome to college basketball immortality, regardless of what happens tonight. Now, if they win tonight, it's even bigger. But even if they don't, welcome to college basketball immortality. This guy just pulled off a shot that every single kid in the history of the world on a driveway dreams about. Everybody dreams about that shot, but so few ever, ever pull it off. In fact, technically, nobody's ever pulled that shot off. That was the 5th buzzer beater in Final Four history, but it was the first pure buzzer beater ever. The first one with his team trailing before the shot. Like, all or nothing. Make it, you advance with a chance to shock the world. Miss it, and you're already at home. That's as epic possibly gets. That bleep was so epic, I think it successfully canceled out all of the horrible juju created by the "that's what's in" morons.
That's what's in.
Alvy, run that crap right now. Run that crap. You don't like that cup. Once and for all. I never want to hear that ever again. I never wanted to hear that in the first place. Unfortunately, you can run it and say that's that, but it's impossible to unhear that crap. It's so moronic. But while you're at it, you can also play an extra buzzer, Alvin, for anybody who thought the Aztecs were not built for a run like this or didn't have enough offense to make a comeback in a game like this. Scoreboard. They had enough offense on Saturday, enough to erase a 14-point second-half deficit and win that damn thing at the buzzer. A buzzer beater, and this is incredible. This is an incredible stat. A buzzer beater from a dude who, according to The Athletic, had made just 1 2-point jump shot for the entire 2021-22 season. Lamont Butler dedicated himself this past offseason to developing that mid-range game and then developed himself all the way to a mid-range buzzer beater in the Final Four. I mean, how absurd is that? It's mind-blowing. The guy made one two-point bucket the year before, the entire season. He took just 10 two-point shots the entire season the year before and made only one. And then made that shot. The whole thing is so insane to me, including the fact that Dutch just let them go on that final play. How about him not using that timeout with his two leading scorers on the bench and just letting his dudes on the floor go win the game? Afterwards, he said he just ran out of plays, but most importantly, remember, March is for players.
You know, we took a timeout the time before, and I told him after the game I'd run out of play, so I might as well just let players play. And so March is for players. Coaches sometimes can get in the way, and I just thought with the time on the clock, I knew Lamont was good going downhill. That's what I wanted.
He's been saying that quite a bit. He said it on this show last week. He said it right there. I love that. March is for players. You know, instead of the coaches making it about themselves, overcoaching, just get out of the play or get out of the way because March is for players. Dutch says he ran out of plays, but the Aztecs clearly did not. Even after they had clawed back somehow from 14 down in the second half to complete the biggest Final Four comeback in over two decades and the third largest Final Four comeback ever. Again, supposedly from a team that's not built for any of this. Supposedly from a team that's not built to score the ball consistently and effectively enough to come back from a double-digit deficit. Never mind that they come back on everybody. Never mind that they came back on multiple teams in the tournament. Hell yes, they're built for that. And a quick word about FAU. Had to be devastating. Had to be an absolutely crushing loss for them to have that 14-point lead and not finish. But I can't say enough about them. The Owls came about as close as you possibly can, which is about a million times closer than anybody would have ever thought possible for FAU to ever come to playing for a national championship. They had an amazing year, an amazing run. They played a great game there. FAU playing in a Final Four game still seems utterly impossible and absurd, even though I watched the whole thing happen. So they doubled Dusty May's salary last week, which still makes him the greatest bargain in the history of college sports, probably. The dude single-handedly transformed that program and the image of the entire school, really. And they had one of the greatest seasons and greatest runs from any non-Power 5 team ever, ever. And they came up one play short. One play and really less than 1 inch, because I still can't believe that Butler did not step out of bounds on that baseline on that final play. Dude was that close to stepping out, and the Owls were exactly that close to playing for the Natty. And again, he barely got that shot up in time. Instead, tonight, we have the Aztecs, and they get to run into the sport's biggest buzzsaw. Notice we're not talking about UConn winning any games by less than an inch, because the Huskies have gone right through and curb-stomped and firebombed everybody on their way to the Natty. These dudes have not had even a close game yet. They just wire-to-wired a very good Miami team without ever trailing in that game. And they made it look easy, again, which is why they're 7 or 7.5 point favorites tonight, depending on where you see it. Frankly, I'm a little surprised it's not more than that. I'm not giving away my pick yet. And the big head will join me at the top of our number two, and we'll both give our picks. You know what the best takes about UConn's dominance? Their coach, Dan Hurley, who's done an incredible job. Like, right after the Miami win, when he couldn't even act that hyped. And the reason for that, as he put it, was, quote, "I knew we'd be playing Monday."
I'm not that excited, fellas, really, to be honest with you. Because we knew we were going to be playing on Monday.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
This was the guy that was supposedly wound too tight. Like, everybody knew he was a great coach. Great basketball mind, great coach, great basketball family. But, you know, the only rap was one of the reasons why they never get it done is he just wrapped too tight, wound too tight. And he's taken the foot off the gas a little bit, mellowed slightly. This dude's a genius. He is such a good coach. Amazing coach, and has them playing amazing ball. They have been that dominant. Dominant enough for him to say, "I'm not that hyped because I knew we'd play Monday night." In fact, I think if you've been watching the tournament, you'd be hard-pressed to say anything otherwise. They've looked that good. They're that talented. They're that deep. They're that big. They play that well on both ends of the floor. They can lock you up defensively. They can get downhill. They can attack the basket. They can step back and knock down the three. Essentially, they have no weakness. Essentially, there's nothing that they don't do very well. Also, Dan Hurley's take on his own team.
No real Achilles heel for this team. You know, we play high-level defense. We rebound the ball. You know, we're one of the top offenses in the country. And we play really hard. And we're deep. So, you know, we've been able to body blow people until we've been able to kind of, you know, break them in the second half.
I respect the hell out of this guy for saying that. Like, he's not giving you any cliche. He's just being real. Like, we're good. We're good. Here's why we're good. Here's how we're good. And we know we're good. And we expect to be here. I like that. Real talk. So there is your challenge, San Diego State. Just deal with all of that, and you'll be just fine. Clones, what do you want when you're craving protein or you need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. You want beef, pure and simple. Where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. Shriveled, dry, tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. It's tender, it's tasty, it's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for its relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest. It goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. So look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you do not see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Mark Kotze is my guest. Mark, it is great to have you on. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, Jim. I'm actually great this morning. I had my teeth cleaned, which was an adventure, and you know, always a fun time sitting in that dentist chair, right?
Oh, dude, that is awesome. That is awesome. Take me through it. How'd that go for you?
Oh, terrible. They wanted to do a deep cleaning. I said, no, I'm on the Romy show. I can't be numb. Can't be talking out of the side of my mouth. So, you know, it's a big day for me. I grew up listening to you. Longtime fan. Are you still doing the Smack Off? Is the jungle still, like, thriving?
My man, yes, Mark. First of all, much respect to you. I appreciate that so much. I was as eager to talk to you as you are to me, so I love hearing that. We are still doing the Smack Off. Mark, believe it or not, if I'm not mistaken, we just did Smack Off number 28. And the old man is still bringing the heat. The show is still great. The clones are still crazy and wild. It is all good, man. It is all good.
That's outstanding, man. I you know, growing up a Southern Cal kid, I would listen to you in college and always followed you. Big fan, and appreciate you having me on.
No, I appreciate it. So good to have you on. In fact, believe it or not, Mark, I want to start right there. I knew this, obviously. I love college baseball. Love college baseball. You had a brilliant career at a powerhouse in Cal State Fullerton. I don't know if our national listeners understand just the power that Fullerton is. I like it even more because, Mark, we still live in Orange County, and both of our sons played travel ball in the area and high school ball in the area. So the area is covered with former Titans who are coaching and teaching the kids. And then secondly, you might recall, I went to UC Santa Barbara, so I'm a huge Big West guy. It's a long way of me asking you, even though you've had this amazing baseball life, how much fun were those college years for you, and what's it mean to you to represent that proud Titan family?
Yeah, no question. College baseball, for me, you know, it's a period of, in your life that, you know, coaches can have the most impact. And my coach, my college coach, Augie Garrido, the late, great Augie Garrido, was instrumental in my path, and I think, Jim, a large reason why I'm sitting in this chair today leading this Oakland A's organization. But the time of my life in college in terms of playing baseball, the joy, the national championship we were able to capture in 1995, you mentioned the travel ball teams in that Orange County area. A couple teammates of mine are coaching, Jim Betzel, Brian Lloyd, still part of the great baseball that goes on in Orange County. And you know, I couldn't be prouder to be, you know, a Titan, you know, still currently living the dream and representing our school as a major league manager. And we've got a lot of Titans in the big leagues. Matt Chapman being, you know, one that pops in my head, and another manager in Phil Nevin as well.
Mark Kotze joining us. There's no doubt. Like, Mark, when I'm in the area and when the guys, like when I see these travel ball, when I see the showcases or when the kids kind of move from team to team and the coaches introduce themselves and they say, I went to Cal State Fullerton, and then inevitably they have some kind of big league experience or pro experience. I mean, everybody, myself included, we're always impressed. Like, Cal State Fullerton just has this thing. They're almost regal like that. It's a powerhouse. So I'm glad that we could talk about that. Let me ask you about that first series. The Angels got 2 out of 3 from you to start the season. Obviously, Mark, not the way you were looking to start the year, but what were your biggest takeaways from the opening series?
I think the biggest takeaways was opening night. We grinded a 2-1 win out against, you could say the best player in baseball in Shohei Ohtani on the mound. And, you know, we kept his bat at bay. We also kept Mike Trout that night from doing any damage. And, you know, we stayed in the game. We fought hard and we grinded a 2-1 win, like I said. And, you know, the next 2 days that pitching really held our offense at bay. And, you know, we didn't score runs. And that's the kind of the meaning of the game, right, is to score enough runs. And unfortunately, the offense just got shut down. And our young pitching, you know, on the mound, we had a starter on Saturday in Shintaro Fujinami, who we signed from Japan, who, you know, we expect big things from, got into trouble in the third inning, couldn't work his way out of it. But, you know, that's to say, you know, we've got some young talented players on this roster that are going to learn that the big leagues is real, and you better bring your A game every night.
A's manager Mark Kotze joining us. You know what, though? You've got some really good young arms, right? How about your opening day starter, Kyle Muller, 6'7 lefty? I want to be careful about this, but I've heard you say it, Mark, so I'm not. Don't need to be too careful about it. Does he remind you of Madison Bumgarner at all? And what's his ceiling if he can put it all together?
Yeah, no, you're right. And that could be a ceiling that we're looking at. You know, Bum's still doing it, which you gotta give mad respect to that. But, you know, for me, this kid's got a huge ceiling. He's big. He can be an innings-eating guy, but he's got the electric stuff, 93, 95 mile an hour fastball with a good breaking ball. And we're developing the changeup. So he gets that changeup to where it needs to be. He's can have a long, long career here and lead this group.
Mark Kotze joining us for talking A's baseball. What about the guy they're throwing to? For those who are not aware of catcher Shea Langeliers, how excited are you about what he can do for your team, both behind the dish and with a bat in his hands?
Yeah, you know, Shea came up last year, and we had another young backstop that we ended up trading to Atlanta in Sean Murphy. And Shea was around Sean for a little while, and you can see the grooming immediately, the impact that he's had. And hey, I got to give a shout out to Stephen Vogt as well, as a veteran guy that was on the staff, that they both impacted Shea Langeliers here and gave him his start. And, you know, Shea's going to mold into a great backstop for a long time. He's a baseball grinder. We knew that when we traded for him from Atlanta. And, you know, Snit, their manager there, called me and said, you're going to love this kid. He's just a baseball, you know, guru, and he has been, and he will be, you know, hopefully a big part of this success in the future for this Oakland Athletic organization.
We're talking to Mark Kotze. Mark, you built for it. You've spent your entire life in it. I'm curious, now that you are where you are, this is year number two. Obviously, every manager, every coach in every sport talks about culture. You're looking to build a certain culture and identity for the team. And, of course, the A's organization has one already, and you've been there before. How would you describe, though, specifically what you're looking to develop in regards to culture or identity with this group?
Yeah, I think the culture's just got to be one that we grind. You know, we talked about it opening day, what we want to be known around the league as, and we want to be known as that team that just doesn't go away, that just continues to fight, you know. And I think it's going to take a lot of energy. There definitely needs to be patience through this process here. You know, we've got a mix of younger, talented players that, you know, you expect to mature and you expect to be longtime big leaguers, mixed in with some veteran guys here that have experience in winning, and Aledmys Diaz and Jace Peterson and, you know, Jesus Aguilar, guys that have played in the playoffs and guys that have that experience that need to impact these younger players. So I think that's the culture. You know, we need to do a lot of grinding, a lot of grit, and just, you know, put our heads down and work each day to get better.
Talking some A's baseball, manager Mark Kotze joins me for a few more moments. They're in action tonight. Mark, you mentioned that you kept Trout and Ohtani in check in the opener, but they had a couple of titanic shots in the fifth inning yesterday. I mean, that'll happen, right? They're two generational talents. Does distance make it any more demoralizing for a pitcher or a team, or does it not matter how much it clears the fence by?
No, it doesn't, Jim. And I can lay it out there for you. In the fourth inning, we had a chance to get out of the inning. We had first and third, two outs.
and the Angels have a young catcher in Ohapi that hits a fastball, 1-1 fastball out. It barely goes over the fence, and it's a 3-run shot. That's pretty demoralizing. And then the next inning, you watch two majestic homers hit by, like you said, two of the best players in the game. And it really doesn't matter. You know, at that point, they're runs, and a run is a run. And, yes, it's, you know, from the bench, you look at it, and you can even be enamored. I've been in the game 27 years, and to watch Mike, you know, Trout hit a ball 40 feet. It captures you sometimes. But in terms of demoralizing, no, the only fact that, you know, you're down 6 runs, chasing 6 in the fifth is what it's all about. And we weren't able to come back from that deficit. But, you know, hey, today's a new day. We got a new opportunity. We got a good team coming in here in Cleveland, a great manager in Terry Francona that I played for, who's a legend. And I look forward to, you know, hopefully kicking his, I guess, can you say ass, Jim?
Yeah. There. Yes, you can. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As long as I'm sitting in this chair, you can. You look forward to kicking his ass, and he's looking forward to kicking your ass, and I respect it. Hey, listen, I see you working. Before you go, Mark, what about Tito? Terry Francona is one of my all-time favorite people in sports. What was he like for you to play for, and how much do you respect him as a manager?
I have the utmost respect for Tito. And, you know, this man cares. He gives his life to the game, to the players. There's no better manager to play for. He's, you know, you hear it all the time. He's a player's manager, and he is through and through. He spends every minute, every day thinking about his guys. And you know, he was phenomenal. He was the only manager to tell me that I was getting designated for assignment. And, by the way, he cried upon doing that, which tells you how deep, you know, he felt for that moment. Hey, it was one of those moments in my career where I learned from and got back on my feet and continued to play for another 5 years. So.
Mark, that's an incredible story you just told. I did not know that. That's an amazing anecdote. So one last thought. We know how much the game has changed. We know what analytics now mean to the game. What about relationships? I mean, how critical? You just told an amazing story about a manager telling a player that he was designated for assignment and he cried. How critical is it to have those types of relationships with your players?
No, I think it's critical. I think the culture in the clubhouse comes from the leadership, and that starts with the manager. And you know, to be attached to your guys and to know what they're going through, be able to, you know, to relate to what they're going through, and he could relate to me. I think he had a moment in his career that impacted him the same way. And, you know, for us, it's you know, we have a job of leading these men and being as transparent as possible. And that's really all they want. They want the truth, and that's what we try to do every day.
That's it, 100%. Every athlete I've ever known, that's all they want. They just want you to shoot them straight, look them in the eye. They can handle bad news, but just be sure you give and deliver the bad news. The A's are 1-2, but they get a new start today. They host the Guardians at 6:40 Pacific time. Mark, that was so long overdue. It is so awesome to have you on the show. Appreciate you, respect you so much, and it was great to have you on. Thank you so much for doing that.
Yeah, thanks, Romy. Appreciate it, man. Have a great day.
Appreciate you. Way to go, Skip. Discover credit cards do something pretty awesome. At the end of your first year, they automatically double all the cash back you've earned. That's right. Everything you have earned doubled. All the cash back from eating at your favorite restaurant doubled. All the cash back from that trip where you sort of learned to snowboard also doubled. And the best part, you don't have to do anything ridiculous to get it. Discover does it automatically. Seriously, though, see terms and check it out for yourself at discover.com/match. When I left here on Friday, Mara's take that, quote, nobody wants to see a player taunting another player, end of quote. Remember, he was on record with that. That was still right up there with LeBron's, not a failure, as one of the single worst and most backward takes ever. Remember?
Nobody wants to see a player taunting another player.
I mean, it's not failure at all.
Two of the worst takes ever, and backwards, and just all wrong. And we talked about that last week. We talked about how terrible that take was last week. I think we were all pretty much in unanimous agreement. Like, there's not that one thing that all of us can agree upon, except that was a terrible take. Because it is a terrible take, and it's the opposite of a true take. Actually, we do want to see players taunt other players. Apparently, unless we're talking about women's college basketball, apparently as soon as we're talking about women's college basketball, then suddenly everybody turns into John Mara. Look, just the fact that folks are getting as fired up as they are about the women's game is a huge win for the women's game. The ratings were already through the roof. If I'm not mistaken, they were already outrating regular season NBA games. That's how good the ratings were. So people were already talking about it and reacting to it in a really positive way. And now you have Hot Take Nation with something to go to battle over. Even though there's nothing controversial about this moment. I would say the moment I'm about to get into, but you already know the moment. So in and of itself, the fact that everybody's getting all riled up about nothing, by the way, is still a huge win for the women's game. What I'm saying is nothing to see here. Nothing to see here, yet it took over social media. So from that standpoint, Angel Reese taunting Caitlin Clark was one of the best things ever for the game. Even if it was one of the most benign, innocuous things ever. Because here I am talking about it, and I never would be, except that folks will not shut up about it. And it's nothing. I cannot even believe that this is a thing, much less the thing. Because there's nothing wrong with what Angel Reese did. LSU just won their first ever national championship. 2 years after they were a 9-win team. They set the title game scoring record with 102 points. Angel Reese was the most outstanding player in the tourney after posting a double-double in every game. Oh, and they beat a legend who had just had the most points, most assists, and most three-point makes ever for a woman at the NCAA tournament. Caitlin Clark is legitimately incredible. And LSU managed to beat her for a natty and did it pretty comfortably. So what I'm saying is, if there were ever a time and a place to strut your stuff and remind folks of what you just did to them, that was the time and the place. I mean, are you kidding me? Are we really having this conversation? Hello, this is elite sports on the sport's biggest stage. What, winners aren't going to talk junk? Winners aren't going to style that win? I mean, get that crap out of here. Angel Reese is a badass who keeps receipts. And she was just being her badass self. And what did she really do? She said, scoreboard, look up at it. I mean, and she is a badass, and she is running on some serious rocket fuel, and she does have an enormous chip on her shoulder. All things she admits. And not only do I not have an issue with it, not only do I not have an issue with it, I respect the hell out of it. She put it best herself, quote, I'm from Baltimore, where you hoop outside and talk trash, end of quote. Another great quote. I'm from Baltimore, where you hoop outside and you talk trash. Hell yes. And here's the thing about that quote, trash talk. What we're actually talking about here is a couple of gestures. Gestures. Not even anything that was said. Not even verbal smack. Reese waved her hand in front of her face and pointed to her finger that is about to be holding a ring or wearing a ring. That's it. That's what this entire uproar is about. Those two gestures are somehow the biggest controversy in all sports this morning. Oh, and by the way, Caitlin Clark did the exact same you can't see me gesture against Louisville in the Elite Eight. She did the exact same thing, and nobody said jack except for the guy who inspired it. It's a wrestling John Cena thing. John Cena even praised it on Twitter because it was awesome. It was awesome when Caitlin Clark did it, and it's awesome when Angel Reese did it to her. It's not that complicated. Guess what, folks? Caitlin Clark, as awesome as she is, and she is awesome on and off the floor, believe it or not, she talks smack too. She even did it Friday night against South Carolina. And guess what? I don't have a problem with that either. Because I don't have a problem with competitors taunting and running smack. Hello, the cavemen would taunt and run smack back in the day. It's gone on forever. It will always go on. And don't be freaking hypocrites about this. Don't act like it's cool when Caitlin did it, but not cool when Angel did it. Or don't act like Caitlin didn't do it at all because she did. And it's completely fine that she did. And it's absolutely fine that Angel beat her and then did it to her in response. I mean, for all of you freaking out on this, lighten the hell up. Have you never watched sports before? It's high-level competition. It's heated. There's going to be trash talk. This isn't some sort of major sports innovation that we have never seen before. Unless you've never seen sports before. If you have ever watched any high-level sporting event before, then you have seen trash talk before. Trash talk that was a whole lot crazier than anything we saw yesterday. And if yesterday was your first ever experience of watching sports, then welcome to the party, pal. This is how it works. At least when it's fun, this is how it works. Again, the Final Four ratings on Friday were their highest ever. And then they drew a higher rating than any NBA game broadcast on ESPN this season. So yes, people are actually watching. And yes, people are talking about it too. That's also great for the women's game. So what Angel Reese did was not only not bad, not only not the worst thing for the sport, like some of you morons are making it out to be, it's actually one of the best things ever because we're still talking about it. And I just devoted an entire segment to it and the sport on the show. Not in the show open, but pretty damn close to it. Trust me, that entire exchange was not a bad thing. It was the best thing. And as great as Caitlin is, don't act like she hasn't done the exact same thing herself because she did just last week. Don't be hypocrites. And if you don't know that she did that, own that. And if you don't understand sports, own that too. But stop wasting your time and everybody else's by getting all up in your feelings about something that really doesn't matter at all. Worry about something that does. I've seen much more hellified smack talk in peewee ball. If you want to get upset over anything, it should be with Kim Mulkey making contact with the refs. How about that? Like, that's okay to do? She was practically on the floor more than her players. If you want to get upset about anything, get upset with that.
Guys, keep yourself tight and feeling confident with new and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant, reformulated with 72-hour sweat and odor protection and 1-quarter moisturizing cream. Stop worrying about your underarms so you can be present for the moments that matter. Do not let underarm insecurities keep you at arm's distance from the ones you care about. Buy new and improved Dove Men Plus Care Antiperspirant with 72-hour sweat and odor protection wherever personal care products are sold.
Pat 40. Pat, always good to have you on. Pat, how are you?
Hey, doing well, Jim. Happy Championship Monday to you.
Happy Natty Championship Monday to you, Pat. Appreciate it. So before we break down tonight's game, Pat, can you go back to Saturday for a few moments? San Diego State's Lamont Butler clearly hit an iconic and legendary shot to put the Aztecs in the title game tonight. But by definition, was it historic? In other words, had anyone ever hit a true buzzer beater in a Final Four game in the manner in which he did, Pat?
He did not. This was new. We have never seen one, a true buzzer beater. There's been six in the Final Four history. The other five, the game was all tied. So you could miss that shot, and the game was still going to go on. This one, it was true win or lose. And, you know, he got it to go. Great, great individual effort on his part and hits the biggest shot in San Diego State history. And Aztecs are moving on.
They are. Pat 40 joining us. Pat, what about FAU? One thought on them. They had that 14-point lead. They appeared to be in control and headed to the national championship game only to have San Diego State do what they've done to others, and that's come back. As devastating as that defeat was to the Owls, how extraordinary was their run, Pat, and how much better did they make the entire tournament?
Yeah, I just think that they were such a great breath of fresh air. Nobody really knew anything about Florida Atlantic. But they'd had a great season, and they finished it up with a great tournament run. And, you know, I think it's good to have new blood circulating at the top of the sport. And the way they played, I think, was really fun. They were fast and fearless and, you know, just a great collection of guys that played well together. And so, you know, I take my hats off to FAU for really giving us a great jolt of life in this tournament.
Agreed. Pat Forty joining us. Pat, UConn took care of Miami. They won their fifth consecutive tournament game by double digits. Before we talk about how dominant they've been, what's that say about the resurgence of the Big East Conference, which had two teams seeded higher than UConn and a third in Creighton that came this close and also had a great look at the tournament as well, and they're going to add Rick Pitino to the conference?
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, that league's on fire right now. You know, Georgetown's going to get better, too, with Ed Cooley. So, you know, I think that it's been a great season for the Big East, and there are better things still to come. You know, Danny Hurley is at what, you know, UConn should be considered a blue blood now. They're playing for a fifth national championship in the last 24 years. And so UConn's not going anywhere. Danny Hurley's not going anywhere. And then the rest of the league, yeah, I mean, Marquette, really good. Creighton, really good. And you go on down the line, Xavier, really good. So that league is going to be great to watch for several years to come now.
You know, Pat's at point that UConn should be considered a blue blood. I mean, they're playing for their fifth national title, their fifth tonight, all of which have come in the last quarter of a century. If they add another one tonight, and I'm not looking by San Diego State, but if they add another one tonight, is it time to add them to the short list of truly elite programs, even in the sports history? Or is it too soon for that if they win tonight? Where do you come out?
No, I think so. I think so, Jim. I think you put them right there, you know, with the great ones. And, you know, the true test of a a college program's ability to sustain itself is, can you win with different coaches? Or are you just a one-coach product? And that's not the case. They won, obviously, three with Jim Calhoun, but then they won one with Kevin Ollie, and now on the precipice of one with Dan Hurley. And he's 50 years old. He's going to be coaching there for probably quite some time. And I think this run is as good as anything, other, you know, like Mike Krzyzewski, late 80s through 2015 is probably the only thing other than UCLA, of course, that we've seen that's better than what UConn has done in the last quarter century.
Pat Forty joining us, getting us ready for the national championship game. Pat, what about San Diego State? What is their best path, in your opinion, to pulling the shocker? What's their best path to victory against a UConn team that's been an absolute juggernaut throughout?
Yeah, well, they're going to have to hit some shots, which is not their strength. But if they can make nine threes like they did this last game, then, hey, they're going to have a chance. You know they're going to just defend like crazy. They're going to rebound very well, but they're going to have to hit some shots, and then they would benefit from the officials, a loose whistle, so to speak, you know, letting them play, because they are a super physical team, and they want to beat you up defensively. If a bunch of fouls are getting called, that's not to their advantage. If few fouls are being called, they might have a shot.
So, Pat, in terms of the matchup itself, like, if you're Brian Dutcher, how do you go about defending Adama Sanogo? Like, if you play off him, he can knock down the three ball. He proved that. If you try to get up into him, he's going to attack the basket and get downhill. If you double him, he just finds the open man. I mean, what do you do to slow this guy down?
Yeah, I mean, he's got the whole package. So, pick your poison. If I were Dutcher, I would probably guard him with Nathan Mensah off the beginning, and he's a really good defensive player, moves his feet well, but also super long and tough. But I would probably back off and make him show that he can hit those threes again. I'd at least give him one open three, say, okay, let's see whether you can do it tonight. And if he does, okay, you're in trouble. But I would dare him to shoot that and then just try to close his pass to the basket and double him judiciously, because they do have shooters that he could pass to.
So, bottom line, Pat, who do you have tonight, and what do you think the game ultimately comes down to?
I've got UConn, and quite frankly, I have low expectations for this to be a great game. You know, this, to me, reminds me a little bit of UConn 04 against Georgia Tech, or UConn 2011 against Butler, where they were just simply the better team, and their opponent maxed out in the semifinals just to get to the championship. So, you know, if they can slow it down, if San Diego State can slow it down and make some shots, maybe that turns differently. But I just get the feeling that this could end up being a bit of a boat race.
I actually see it the exact same way. Pat, before you go, what about, we talked about how unusual the tournament's been, how unusual the Final Four is. And by unusual, I mean, this is really cool, I think. It's been kind of an aberration, an anomaly. Should we expect to see more of this moving forward, given the parity and the changing landscape of the sport overall? Or are we never going to see something quite like this again?
Well, I don't know. We might. It's possible that this is a one-off, But it's also possible, you know, I mean, you can build a Florida Atlantic now in a lot of places, you know. Now, they didn't do it necessarily transfer portal heavy, but you go out, get some players, you fill in a few key gaps with the portal guys. You can scrape together some NIL money and keep some players from going to other programs. I mean, there's a lot of places that I think have a chance to have successful runs, and I think that's better for the sport.
Hey, Pat, last thought. You've covered everything that matters. You and I have talked sports for years and years and years. I've got to get your reaction. What do you make of the outrage and reaction to Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and that entire thing, jumping the day, being a hot topic again today? You've been around a long, long time, Pat. What do you make of this whole thing?
Yeah, you know, it's a very hot topic. I think that, look, that's basketball, right? Trash talk, and Caitlin Clark will talk a lot of trash herself, so giving it back to her, hey, that's part of the sport. And for people like to get all like wound up protective of Caitlin Clark in this situation, to me, is almost patronizing and insulting. Like, she's a baller. She can handle herself. She doesn't need people to say, you leave Caitlin Clark alone. So, you know, that's part of basketball. Play, talk, fine, win.
I love it. I said the same thing. I made the exact same statement that you made. Not that good part at the very end. That it is actually patronizing to her. Like, somebody take care of her and defend her. She can handle herself. She's proven that more times over. Pat Forte is a senior writer for SI, co-host of the College Basketball Inquirer podcast, and all over the Final Four in the national championship game. Pat, always appreciate it. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks very much.
So we're going to bust out right now with a mini Big Head Bets with James Kelly. Before I get into it with him, the head hit both Final Four games correctly against the spread. This time, I agreed with him. I did not go up against him. Therefore, we both got paid, and it felt pretty damn good. So we'll take one last shot because tonight's game is for the Natty. Head, what's going on? How was your weekend? How you feeling right now?
Great weekend. Feel great. Matt in San Diego has me inspired today. I am fantastic, Jim.
Love it. Those two games, those two wins felt good, didn't
they?
Oh,
dude. Awesome Final Four. Way better than Drake's. He lost all of his. We won ours. Awesome Final Four.
Again, that's a good philosophy and a good way to go about it. If you don't know how to bet, just fade Drake.
Just fade Drake. Well. Find his Instagram and just go the opposite.
Okay, so, for the record, your guy, Matt, you hyped him up. He said that you went with the money line pick with FAU. That's not true, right?
No, that's not true. I said I wouldn't be surprised if FAU won, which they almost did, but I said
dude,
take the
you
points.
Were going to say they should have won. I know you were.
Yeah.
They almost did is right.
Yep, they but almost
did. But
you
did not play the money line.
No, no.
All right, so let's get into this. San Diego State has shown tremendous grit, tremendous heart, tremendous physicality. They earned this spot. Question is, did they earn the right to get punched in the face, or can they keep this one close against UConn, which has been a juggernaut throughout? I know you hit UConn early to win it all.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, Head. Brilliant
18
pick.
18-1, Jim. 18-1.
Hey, that's smart, Head. You are illiterate, but you are smart, if that makes sense. 18-1 is a brilliant move by you. So I know you already have that bet, but go ahead. Hit it again for just tonight's game. If you like San Diego State, first of all, are you seeing 7 or 7.5? And if you like San Diego State, that's pretty good value. I know that when a whole lot of money is going one way, you normally run the other way. I'll just shut up and lay out. What are you doing with this?
Yeah, it's 7.5 right now. The money and majority of the bets, to the surprise of absolutely no one, is being placed all on UConn here. So, yes, I'm trying to figure a way to take San Diego State. My worry is it's not easy at all, and I'm going back to the Ken Pom research I had on Miami's historical ass defense and how they couldn't win at all because it was so bad. Well, San Diego State's offense would qualify this century for being the worst of any national title winner, and it's not close. On Ken Pom's adjusted offense efficiency ratings, only 3 winning teams have been outside the top 10. Most are top 3-ish. UConn tonight is top 3. The worst offense for a champion was the 2011 Kimba-led Huskies offense that ranked 19th. This San Diego State team ranks 68th. They have, not good at all. They have one guy who scores in double figures. Their offensive strength also lies inside the arc. And UConn, as you know, always has a shot-altering big. Sorry, I said shot.
I'm going to let it slide, dude. That's hard.
Yeah, big
especially
word right
for
there. They always have a shot-altering big on the court. Right. Two big fellas always out there doing their best to block shots and just alter them all. So below not good right there. But here's why I'm going to take the Aztecs, Jim.
Remember, you know the rules of the show. If things go badly, just pull the eject cord, man, before you impale yourself on the side of the mountain. Are you trying to get run?
No.
What if Alvin ran James Kelly in the middle of a big head bet segment?
Don't do that, Alvin, because I'm taking the Aztecs. I'm going to tell you why, too, right here.
Yes. You're rolling with San Diego State.
Hell yes, I am. They have a unique ability to muck the game up. They have held their last 10 opponents to under 44% shooting. UConn is 9-7 when being held to 44% or under from the field. Offensive rebounding. UConn does a great job of minimizing this, but Creighton was better, and the Aztecs got to the glass against them. And their past three games against Alabama, Creighton, and AFU, they've averaged 14 offensive rebounds.
AFU.
I'm sorry.
Florida. Atlantic Florida University, AFU? You mean that one?
FAU. FAU. Sorry. Yeah. They've averaged, my point, though, is 14 offensive rebounds.
What is your point, dude, about AFU? 14. I'd love to hear it.
Offensive rebounds per
Kansas
game.
Jayhawks.
Kentucky led the country in grabbing about 12 of them a game. So San Diego State is, thank you, Alvin, for all those real quick. Also, another point. UConn's fast break.
He's not a bleeping jukebox, all right?
UConn's fast break is key, as we know, but Alabama's was actually better, and the Aztecs held that immoral squad to zero fast break points the entire game. They also are experienced. Their starting five and core is older than the Oklahoma City Thunders. I love that. And they play their best.
Can I ask, what is immoral?
Immoral? I don't know. Bad
amoral,
people.
Immortal.
I don't know. E means horrible.
Electronic mortality? Like, you make it up?
Amoral, immoral, bad people, bad coach.
Oh, immoral.
Yeah, that one. That
one.
Oh,
you wanted
right
to crack Alabama again.
Yeah.
Five-star talent, zero-star person, that thing.
That's it. Brandon Miller, Nate Oates.
Oh, dude, you're right. They're very immoral.
Yes. Thank you.
You're
that was
right.
My point all
corrected.
Along. There we go.
Extraordinarily immoral.
That's devastating.
Go ahead.
That was my point. Okay, also, they play their best against better teams. They beat Alabama, like we just said. They beat Creighton, who beat the Huskies this season. And pace is key in covering here. KenPom's adjusted tempo stats have UConn playing as the 214th slowest team in the country and the Aztecs as the 270th. So they will play slow. And despite UConn being 16-0, in non-conference games this year and 16-0 against the spread.
You're dropping engine parts and leaking oil, dude. You gonna get that plane down?
Dude, check this number out. 16-0 against the spread in non-conference games for UConn.
Run that by me one more time.
16-0 against the spread in non-conference games for UConn
dude.
This season.
Wow.
But despite that,
you're going to pick against them.
Hell yes. Aztecs plus 7.5.
Wow, dude. Congratulations on getting that plane down. Harrison Ford would be impressed. So you said you were trying to talk yourself into taking San Diego State. You did just that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying to talk myself into San Diego State since Saturday night because of the respect I have for Brian Dutcher and his crew, because they're tough as hell. They're clutch enough. They always seem to find a way.
Mm-hmm.
They're the epitome of not dead, can't quit. They fall behind double digits. It just doesn't matter. They know they'll be fine. They expect to come back, and they do. I just think that this is a different ask. UConn is a different beast than they've been dealing with. Try as I may to convince myself to go with San Diego State, especially hearing what you just said, especially since they just took down the number one overall seed in Alabama, those guys who were so immoral.
Mm-hmm. Immoral.
I just can't do it. I can't. Okay. I cannot go against the Huskies. How can you? They've got too many ways to beat you. They have too many weapons. They can get out and hurt you in transition. They can beat you from beyond the arc. Right now, they're playing nearly as well defensively as they are offensively. And on the offensive end, to me, Head, they look unstoppable. Again, you and I talk about this all the time, both during our podcast and on this show. When all the money is going one way, it's good to go the other way. The money's going to UConn. I've been trying so hard to see it the way you see it and to go the other way and to ride with the Aztecs and the points, but I just can't do it. They made an incredible run. There's nothing fluky about it or them. Damn good program, really impressive team, but tonight, I think UConn has too much.
Oh.
I think that UConn is at least 7.5 points better, and that's not me dogging the Aztecs. I love them, it's me hyping UConn. San Diego State had, let me get your thoughts on this, they shot it pretty well against AFU.
Mm-hmm.
FAU.
Right.
I just don't think they can score with UConn. And UConn's got so many weapons and so many different ways to beat you. Dan Hurley's done an incredible job. He's going to have them dialed and ready to fire. I will take the Huskies and lay the points. Would you like to change your mind?
No. Riding San Diego State here, man. And my Harrison Ford music out of here.
All right. Have a great day, Head. Thank you very much.
Jim. All right.
All right. So we're going opposite ways on this one. Let's go to San Diego. Matt in San Diego. Good to have you, Matt. How you doing?
Romy, again, what a time to be alive. I am currently in Houston, and I got to witness that shenanigans. It is, I'm still in disbelief. So I wanted to recap on my last call because I got ran by Alvin way too early. Everybody has a plan until I get punched in the mouth, and I definitely got punched in the mouth. But I get up off of that, and every failure is an opportunity to learn and to grow and to get better and to talk to you. So before you run me, Alvin, I'm an 11-year brain cancer survivor. I'm currently battling stage 4 glioblastoma. Look it up. It is not good, below not good. Years of chemotherapy, months of radiation, 3 surgeries. I was partially paralyzed on my left side, and I had to do speech therapy as a physical therapy, and now I'm talking to you. Fantastic day. But this is the greatest day of my moment right now. This is it. Yes, I said I was an SDSU ball boy back in the mid-90s and listened to you on 690 with my dad after every game. But take a good, hard look at San Diego State now. All the experts, oh, they can't beat Charleston. They can't beat the number one overall seed in Alabama. They can't make it to the Final Four. Guess again, experts. I just witnessed the greatest moment of San Diego sports in my entire life. We are playing for the Natty, and I'm here to see it. Fantastic. War Steve Fisher turning water into wine. War Lamont Butler being a stone-cold assassin. War Xander Bogaerts straight vandalizing the Western Metal Building with bombs at Petco Park. War the San Diego Sports Renaissance. And unwar the flight deck picking FAU money line. I am out.
Dude! Attaboy! Way to go, Matt. All right, a couple of things. First of all, the flight deck never plays the money line. I don't know where that came from. He didn't pick money line. The flight deck hit both those games. He does not. I don't know that he's ever. Hey, James, hit me real quick. Have you ever hit the money line? I don't think he ever plays money line. I will on occasion. He didn't know, but that's not factually, that's not accurate. He will with Major League Baseball. Let's go to Matthew in Ramona. It's good to have you, Matthew. How are you?
Hey, Jim. What a better time to be living in San Diego. I mean, you talk about a city that has had their hearts ripped out and never won a championship except the old AFL Ron Mix-led Chargers back in the day against the Boston Patriots. But what a better time to be in San Diego. And my only hope is they duct tape Dean Spanos to a most uncomfortable chair and make him watch that whole thing game.
I got you, Matthew. That's an old school San Diego guy right there, dropping a Ron Mix. Let's go to Bakersfield. Michael, great to have you. Michael, how are you?
Hi. I think this UConn plays like Baylor team that won the championship a couple of years ago. They don't go on a scoring drought at all. That is what I noticed. Even I know Alabama was vulnerable. I knew they could be beating. And when they were beating, I was not surprised because they had gone on a scoring drought a lot in their games, and some of their games they won on buzzer beater. You don't want buzzer beater. You want to be scoring within the next 2 or 3 minutes, not on a drought like 10 minutes, you don't score. So that's what I noticed. UConn, they don't go on a scoring drought at all. That's why I think they will win.
Let's go to Colorado Springs. Perry, good to have you, Perry. What's up?
Yes, hey, Joe. Jim, I just wanted to mention with the Andrew Reese situation, I've never seen any videos of Caitlin Clark literally following a player after a game to prove a point, like, in their face. So when I saw Angel Reese did it, it just stood out to me like, wow, that seems like a bit much. It doesn't seem like it was in context of maybe they were trash-talking each other, during the game. It just seemed like she literally went out of her way to be like, hey, look at me, look at me, look what I did, I'm in your face. I don't know. It just seemed, I can see why people kind of say, wow, that seemed classless, because there's a difference. I've never seen Caitlin Clark go after any other player with an intent that way. So I'm just saying, I just saw there was a difference, and I see why people are kind of, you know, making the comments that they are.
All right, I appreciate it, Perry. I respect your opinion. I don't agree with it at all, but I respect your opinion. Smack off season, anything can happen. We go to Sacramento. Ryan, what's going on?
Hey, what's up, JR? Thanks for the Vine. Hey, you know, UConn is a basketball program. SDSU is a family. Steve Fisher started that family tree, and Exhibit 1 is Brian Dutcher. He could have had any job in the country, but he stuck with SDSU. And it's not just Dutch. Look at Coach Matt Soria. He was a team manager in 02, still an assistant coach. David Velasquez, assistant coach, team manager in 02. I was lucky enough to be a part of that program from 02 to 07. You know what SDSU does? They recruit guys to turn them into men and to chase titles and to make runs towards the national championship. Look at UConn, two seniors. SDSU, eight seniors, and mostly upperclassmen. SDSU, tonight's game, is going to be a grind. Tonight is going to be about efficiency. UConn has not seen a team that can defend this way and has seen a team that makes you play 30 seconds on both sides of the court. So I think more people need to be saying SDSU isn't running into the buzzsaw. It's UConn that's going to be running into the buzzsaw, with SDSU holding Creighton to only 56 and Alabama to 64. War special assistant Mark Fisher at SDSU kicking ALS's ass, and War a title coming to Montezuma Mesa. I am out.
Wow, Ryan, straight.
Good night now.